Good morning. It's time to get up with the NFL. We know the 2020 season is going to look different, but will it start on time? Why, that question is getting louder. And Colin Kaepernick is looking for a job in the NFL. LeBron James wants the league to apologize to him. Wait until you hear how our experts would handle that. And speaking of jobs, Tom Brady has one. Win the Buccaneers a Super Bowl. Why, he's already ruffling some feathers down in Tampa. Get up. Starts right now. And good morning. I'm Ryan Smith in for Mike Greenberg. We'll have you for the next 2 hours. We've got a jam-packed show, a lot going on this morning, so let's get right to it. And we start with the NFL. And let's talk about this. NFL Executive Vice President Jeff Pass says the league has advised teams to start preparing for training camps on time. Now, most teams are expected to have players report no later than July 28th, so time is tight. Roger Goodell spoke to reporters Thursday after a virtual meeting with NFL owners.
We had a very lengthy discussion on our preparation for the 2020 season and our ongoing work as we prepare to open training camps on time to get ready for games at our stadiums. We've discussed all these topics with the Players Association on numerous occasions as recently as just the last couple of days. We're both focused on ensuring the players as well as coaches and other essentials to the game will have the safest possible environment this season. Obviously, that includes our fans also. Those conversations have been very productive, and obviously there's a lot more for us to do.
A lot more to do, not a lot of time. Let's welcome in ESPN NFL reporter Jeff Darlington. Jeff, how are players, coaches, and GMs approaching the NFL's expectation of starting training camp on time?
Well, Ryan, I can tell you that generally speaking, there's just this sort of cloud of uncertainty that players, executives, general managers, coaches are all feeling the same way maybe the rest of us are. I was casually talking with one franchise quarterback just the other day saying, oh, when you heading back to your city to start camp? And he just looked at me and goes, I don't know. And I think that that's probably indicative of the way everybody is feeling right now. Look, 2 days ago last year is when the NFL announced all of the dates for training camp, when everybody would begin camp. Right now, all these players are sitting here saying, I don't know when we're going back. The league still has time. It's not as if these players can't just basically on a moment's notice turn around and head back to wherever they play their games. I'm just saying right now, if you're wondering when football is going to be played, so too are the people who play it.
See, Jeff, that's really interesting because you would think that they would have certainty at this point, even though we're in an uncertain environment. So I then think, what is the level of optimism about whether the NFL will conduct the entire season?
So, again, I think it's interesting because you hear from Roger Goodell. And the NFL widely is doing, from the people I have spoken to, what people would like to see the NFL do, and that is create a plan, at least continue to roll out protocols in order to safely return to facilities, return to training camp, and eventually play in games. Whether the NFL eventually has to scale that back, ultimately, remains to be the question. But I was speaking with two general managers yesterday who were basically saying, yeah, no, the NFL is doing exactly what's right. It's easier. It's going to be easier to scale back and say this is canceled than it would be to say in a month's time, if all of a sudden football feels like a comfortable thing to do, to be able to say, oh, wait, we didn't think about that. Now we need to force this forward. So the NFL continuing to take the necessary steps to play football if, in fact, they're able to do so in a month's time.
Okay, and right now the show goes on, and we hope it starts on time. Jeff, thank you. All right, and just about 9 o'clock in the morning, right here in the East, you're here with Get Up, Ryan Smith in for Mike Greenberg. A lot to cover today on the show, a lot of football. So let's continue with the discussion. And this is very interesting. Saints safety Malcolm Jenkins, right? He is a big voice in the NFL, carries a lot of weight. He told CNN yesterday that the risk surrounding the coronavirus would have to be eliminated for him to feel comfortable returning to play. Take a listen.
Until we get to the point where we have protocols in place, and until we get to a place as a country where we feel safe doing it, we have to understand that football is a non-essential business. And so we don't need to do it. And so the risk, has to be really eliminated before I would feel comfortable with going back.
All right, let's bring in Dan Orlovsky, Mike Tannenbaum, Dominique Foxworth. Guys, it's interesting. He first said we, and then he changed to I would have to feel comfortable coming back. Mike, I wonder, how would you react to these comments?
Well, the unfortunate reality, Ryan, is some players and often I would say the case will be coaches as well are going to test positive at some point. And I think what the commissioner said earlier in the show about how they're going to take all reasonable precautions and players are going to have to make decisions. And I think it's understandable and reasonable, especially an older player that says, I want to opt out. I think we're going to see that in the NBA. And I think there has to be transparency and communication to say that, look, here's the environment. We're going to do what we can, understanding that players could test positive and we're going to be prepared for that as well. And then from a front office and coaching perspective, a lot of flexibility, a lot of contingency plans have to be made.
Dan, what do you think?
I mean, I think Mike T brings up some great points. You know, if you look at Avery Bradley for the Lakers and his reasoning going, I'm not going back. I've got some health tied to my family that it's just not worth that risk. We're going to have players in the NFL. They're going to be faced or forced to have those same discussions and make those same decisions. But then there are players in the NFL who their career is essential business to them. There's plenty of players in the NFL who live paycheck to paycheck and they support families. And I'm not just talking about their immediate family, but their families. And so their income is important to them. Over 60% of the NFL is a minimum salary player. Over 60%. The average career is about 3 or 4 years long. And so a lot of these guys, player-wise, are going to be forced to make the decision of, I only have so many years left that I can play. I'm in my third year. There's not going to be a bigger window for me to make this amount of money that I could set myself up for in the future to protect myself or my family members. And so there are going to be some very difficult decisions that are going to have to be made moving forward of, is it worth it for me to go potentially self-quarantine myself? Maybe some players are going to have to stay away from their family for the extended period of the football season where they'll live in a hotel or a short-term rental and they just go to football and don't expose themselves to any family members or really outside public. And so it's going to be a lot of individual decision-making. Where those guys sit financially and within their career is going to be probably the greatest determining factor whether they choose to go forward or not.
And Dominique, I find it interesting that he said eliminated when there's so much talk about the virus not being eradicated for quite some time, not at least until the end of this year, possibly even longer.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes we're all on TV and sometimes we say things that we don't exactly mean, but I'm going to take him. He's a experienced and smart guy, so I'm going to take him at his word. So that means that the Saints need to start developing their backup safety to be their starting safety because the virus is not going to be eliminated. The threat of the virus is not going to be eliminated. Even the most optimistic people are not saying that it's going to be eliminated by the fall. But as far as what Dan was saying, I think that's an excellent point because if I were one of the family members of one of these players, just from a financial standpoint, I would tell them not to play. But if I was one of these players, and even if I had already made a lot of money, I would still probably go play. And I think the idea of quarantining yourself, if the NFL does not have some bubble plan in place, I think that's smart. Because the point that Dan was making, even if you aren't living paycheck to paycheck as a player, or even if you don't need this money right now, this is what they've spent their entire life preparing for. This is their opportunity to stockpile money. If you don't know it, there aren't very many jobs or opportunities for guys who played football after they were done playing, unless they can stay in the media like us. Like, you're not going to make any money doing or make that amount of money doing other things. So it's a calculation that guys would have to make. And I don't know that you could ever quite feel comfortable with yourself if you bring home a virus that goes into your family, the older members of your family, or people with comorbidities and causes some sort of issue that is detrimental to their health. I don't know that you could ever live with that. So I would understand a player, as hard as it might be, isolating himself from his family because he thinks it's the best thing to do for them going forward so that they don't get sick, and also not giving up on this opportunity to make what will amount to be probably somewhere close to half to 70% of their lifetime earnings. They have to do that because their time's not going to stop. They're not going to be 27 again next year. Like, that's a season that they'll never get back. And from working in labor, it's something, or working for the union and looking at strikes and lockouts, it's something that we talk about quite a bit.
Think about how complicated that decision is. You got to take advantage of every single second playing in the league, but at the same time, the possibility of infecting people in your family, of putting them in danger. Can't imagine how tough that must be, but you guys make some great points there. And the other part of this is, I wonder that in all of this, if they start seeing more positive tests, if guys are sitting out or if it gets a little better, do you hold them back? So one more thing, Mike, I just have to ask you real quick. Do you think the season should be pushed back?
Yeah, I think time's on the NFL side. I would wait, maybe start October 1st. We got to remember, the Super Bowl could be played in Tampa well into late February, early March. So the more time we have, hopefully there's progress on a vaccine. There'll be learnings from the NBA, MLB. So I would push the season back. And I think what these teams have to do is be very transparent and communicate that, look, we know some players are going to test positive. We're going to take every reasonable precaution. And if that unfortunate circumstance happens, we will do what we can in terms of quarantine, give you the medical support necessary, but we're going into this with our eyes wide open.
Okay, we'll see what the league does on that. Thanks, guys. We'll be back with you in a bit. Let's go to the NBA. The NBA briefed players on Thursday about their security plan to help enforce the health and safety protocols in the Orlando bubble when the league restarts next month, just 11 days away. Teams are scheduled to begin arriving on July 7th. Here's the concern. The state of Florida has experienced a spike in COVID-19 during the month of June. According to Johns Hopkins, the number of daily confirmed new cases has increased 582% during that time, reaching its single-day high on the 24th. Now, The Athletic anonymously quoted some NBA GMs about their concerns. Here they are. Quote, if the cases keep spiking in Florida, things are going to happen. I'm really, really concerned for the league big picture-wise in many, many ways. Here's another one. I know all the proper measures are being taken, but still a lot of it is unknown. You know, and I know why we are playing, for the money. If not that, do you really think we would be playing? I get it and I'm in, but with hesitation. And here's a telling one. With each case that rises in Orlando, the smart players with families are like, why the bleep are we going to play? Are we going there again? Talk about some quotes right there. Let's bring in ESPN reporter Zach Lowe. Zach, it's June 26th. How are you feeling right now about the health and safety concerns of the NBA resuming the season?
Probably a lot like some of those GMs, honestly. The one that was like, I'm concerned, but I'm all in. I'm going to go anyway. I think that's probably, if there's anything that's like a consensus among players, coaches, GMs, outside of the teams that really want to go because they can win, it's sort of like, I'm a little concerned. The Orlando numbers are getting scary. The bubble is getting a little more permeable because of that. But you know what? We're still going to go. We're going to see how it is. And I still think when you talk to players and agents, as I was yesterday, they're still sort of like, we're going to give it a shot.
Yeah, that's key. They want to go for it. They want to try it. But how have teams responded to the handful of players coming back and testing positive? You got guys like Nikola Jokic, some of the big names out there already with positive tests.
And there are more than have been reported publicly, but teams expected that. Teams expected guys to come back, get tested, and a certain percentage to test positive. And in some ways, that sort of can get twisted into an argument in favor of the bubble. In other words, a certain amount of guys are going to catch this out in the regular world. It's unclear to me that the bubble, even playing 5-on-5 basketball, is more conducive to catching the virus than just regular life. That partly depends on how you would behave in regular life. But teams expected these tests to come back positive. And there are even some people with teams who would say, you know what, if you start with the assumption that some of our guys are going to test positive, just, you know, and we hope they recover, obviously all of that, it's almost better for them to do it now where they can quarantine and then get back into shape than it would be if we go to Orlando and they do it, you know, in the middle of the conference finals. Again, that's a sort of callous, competitive way of looking at it, but that line of thought is out there.
Okay, and then I have to ask you, what is the NBA's plan? If a bunch of players on one team contract the virus, how would they handle that?
Well, they released 113 pages of guidance a couple of weeks ago. And that question was not answered. And I don't think it's a coincidence that question was not answered. All they said was a small number of positive tests will not cause a suspension of the season. I don't think they want to answer that question on paper now. I don't think they want to commit to an answer. The other possibility is they simply don't have an answer to it that's a good answer that anyone wants to hear. Because right now, Game 7 of the finals is October 13th. Next season, loosely starting December 5th, December 10th, early December. That's not a lot of time. There's no time in there for a two-week break to stop a series and wait for people to get better. So there might really only be two answers to that. Number one, you continue playing through it all, or you stop the whole enterprise, and nobody wants to hear those answers.
Wow, and you think about it. If you continue playing, how do you keep everybody else safe? So many complicated things to think through there. Zach, thanks. Coming up, Baker Mayfield, Odell Beckham, and the Browns struggled last season. Why their new head coach won't allow that to happen again. And We saw Tom Brady practicing in Tampa yesterday. Why Dominique has a problem with it in the times in which we're living. That's coming up. You are watching Get Up.
GEICO gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that GEICO is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like your mom, when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name, check. Birthday, social security, is that a thing? Hey, mom, what is my social security number? Mom? Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag done.
GEICO, always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
Get Up is brought to you by The Last of Us Part 2, available now, rated M for mature, and USAA, proud supporter of the military community. What you're made of, we're made for. Welcome back, and let us get to the Cleveland Browns. Baker Mayfield, he's going to be playing for his fourth head coach in three seasons since being drafted number one overall for the Browns back in 2018. Now, Mayfield's new head coach, Kevin Stefanski, said he's been impressed by how Mayfield has handled the virtual offseason.
Been very impressed, like I've said before, with the work he's put in. He's all ears. He's taking it all in. I think Alex Van Pelt and the coaching staff are really giving him a lot, and I don't see any limitations with Baker. So he's done a really nice job, and you know, I talked to him actually this morning, and he's raring to go, and hopefully we'll get him back in here and with his teammates.
And Baker's had some real quality teammates at his disposal. Obviously, he has OBJ, Jarvis Landry, and Nick Chubb. But additionally, he's now bolstered the team with new signings, Austin Hooper and Jack Conklin, to go along with first-round draft pick Jedrick Wills Jr. All right, so let's bring the guys back in. Mike, I hate to be the negative guy, but I'm going to go ahead and be the negative guy anyway. Let's ask the question of how long a leash do you give him if, say, he goes out first game of the season and throws, let's say, three picks?
Ryan, a very, very short leash. I know Kevin Stefanski really well. He's smart. He's deliberate. He's disciplined. He will have zero compunction to bench Baker Mayfield. Baker Mayfield will not throw 21 interceptions because when he's on track to do that, he'll be standing next to Kevin on the sidelines. Look at what Kirk Cousins did last year. Great offense, six interceptions. So I know Kevin, the standards are going to be high. His timeline is a lot longer in Cleveland than Baker Mayfield's is. And if Baker plays well, which we all hope, and you talked about the additions, great. But as soon as those picks start, he will be on the sidelines and Kevin will not flinch.
So, Dom, if that's the key, he's got to get off to a fast start.
Yeah, I think he does. And I think that he will do just fine. I obviously think that he'll, or not obviously, I believe that he will get some consistency. And I think a lot of people think Baker was better than he actually was in his rookie year. I don't think that we really want Baker to get back to that rookie year because he was boom and bust that season. It was great game, then several terrible games in a row, then great game. What they need out of him is consistency. And I think Stefanski's run heavy offense, or at least run based offense, is going to make it easier for him to establish that stability. And we have this debut bias with Baker. He had such a great Thursday night debut where he played incredibly well in 2018, and the Browns won for what it felt like the first time in forever. And then we all just thought Baker was a done product, and he still needed to develop, and I think we'll see that development this season.
All right, so Dan, what do you think?
All right, a couple things for me to kind of attack here. First, Dom, you talk about Baker's rookie year and it kind of being up and down and not that great rookie year. So there's going to be some good and some bad, right? So that does justify some fluctuation. But I think in the last eight games of that rookie year, he goes 20 touchdowns and seven picks. So really found some consistency really in the back half of his rookie year, which is an enormous sign. Like, people forget about 2018. Like, we just pretend it never happened with Baker Mayfield. Mike T, you are 100% correct that Baker Mayfield is not going to be throwing 21 interceptions next year. And this is why. He's thrown 35 interceptions in his first 2 years. 29 of them have come on non-play action pass concepts, just strict drop back football. Baker Mayfield is a play action passing quarterback. 40% of the Vikings offense pass game wise last year was off the play action pass. It is the perfect marriage. Baker Mayfield will not be benched next season. There is a 0% chance that Baker Mayfield is going to be benched. He is going to play really good football. You mentioned they are going to be a run-centric football team. They're not going to be so reliant on playing drop-back football. Baker, go do everything yourself. They're going to play to his strength. If you guys were numbers guys, if you were strictly numbers guys, maybe at a great accountant and not really good people person, and I said, hey, you're a numbers person, great, you got to go do HR, you would struggle as well too. They constantly asked Baker to do things that he's not great at last year. Now he's in a scheme that fits his skill set. He's going to play really well. There's a 0% chance Baker's going to get benched next year.
Well, I mean, that wasn't the question, though, to be fair. I agree with you. I think that he's likely not to get benched. But the question was, if he has a bad start, will he get benched? And I don't think that he has this type of that they have this type of faith in him that you think they do. I think if he has a bad start, done with him. I don't know that people believe he's a franchise.
How many quarterbacks
that you think
he already is? How many guys in the NFL, how many quarterbacks in the NFL can get off to a bad start? I don't know how we quantify that. Maybe three picks every game. How many guys are going to not get benched? I mean, not a ton of guys are going to just ride that out. I also would tell you this. They played like two good defenses in their top first eight games. I think Pittsburgh and Baltimore. So he's got that in his favor as well. So
I'm going to jump in because I know Mike is dying to get in here. Go ahead, Mike.
I appreciate that. There's one other interesting dynamic here, guys. It's a rookie head coach. If Baker Mayfield has a bump in the road early in the season, he may not say this publicly, but I'm telling you, here's what Kevin Stefanski is thinking. This is an opportunity. If I bench Baker Mayfield, they're going to all fall in line. And what have we said over the last couple of years? Cleveland has underachieved as an organization. Penalties, turnovers. If Mayfield gets benched, even if it's for a game or two, I promise you, he'll get the attention of that whole team.
Dan, go ahead. I know you're not feeling that. I'm looking at his face.
If he has a bump in the road, he's going to get benched? Like, every quarterback in the NFL has to play well. He is in his third year, fourth offensive coordinator. Like, we've got to – Mike T., you are notorious, and I love the line. It's a developmental position, and it's one that I have kind of stolen from you. We have to allow Baker to develop. Did 2018 not happen? Did it just not happen? Like, last year, he threw 13 interceptions while that team was trailing because they always played bad football early. They broke the NFL record for penalties. They were set up to fail. He was set up to fail last year. And so how do we quantify bump in the road? Like, Baker Mayfield's a good player. He's in a perfect scheme fit. Yes, Kevin Stefanski needs to get everybody to fall in line. You know what would be a great way to get everyone to believe in their head coach? Get their young quarterback to play really, really good football. Then everyone's going to go, we got our coach. He's got Baker Mayfield rolling. We're winning football games. This is perfect for us.
All right, guys, I got to leave it there. Dan having absolutely no compunction about how much he doesn't like this conversation, we can tell.
Stop using
Thanks,
words.
Guys.
I don't know
appreciate
what they mean. I don't know what that word means.
I'll tell you in the break. Don't worry about it. All right, well, we'll have half of the FA Cup quarterfinals this weekend. The oldest national football competition in the world, Norwich City versus Man U, tomorrow at 12:25 Eastern. And Sunday, Sheffield United, Arsenal. 7:55 a.m. Eastern on ESPN, ESPN Deportes, and the ESPN app. Tom Brady and Gronk have to learn a new offense with the Buccaneers, and they're defying medical recommendations to do just that. Do our guys take issue with this? Find out next.
It's your home speaking, and I need you to do me a couple of favors. First, could you get that blueberry that rolled under the fridge last week? It's throwing my feng shui off. Second thing, bundle your home and car insurance with Geico. It's easy, and we could save money. Lastly, I know you were thinking of painting the nursery back to off-white, but I'm actually feeling this baby blue. Didn't think it was my color, but I am pulling it off.
Geico. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
Back with you on Get Up and a little Get Up and Go. Let's start with the Run for the Roses. Churchill Downs planning to have limited fans in attendance for the rescheduled Kentucky Derby in early September. Fans will be encouraged to wear masks and practice social distancing when possible. And Liverpool ended their 30-year title drought, taking home the Premier League crown following Man City's 2-1 loss at Chelsea on Thursday. Liverpool fans took to the streets to celebrate their championship, and LeBron took to Twitter, saying right here, he owns a small piece of it, by the way. He tweeted, Premier League champions, Let's go LFC YNWA. You'll never walk alone. That's their official song. And then NASCAR yesterday released a photo of the noose that had been hanging in Bubba Wallace's garage stall, which the FBI determined had been there since as early as October. NASCAR's president, Steve Phelps, defended Wallace and addressed NASCAR's initial reaction to learning about the noose.
Bubba Wallace and the 43 team had nothing to do with this. Bubba Wallace has done nothing but represent this sport with courage, class, and dignity. It is offensive seeing anyone suggest otherwise, and frankly, it's further evidence of how far we still need to go as a society. Some feel that the phrasing or words used were not right. That comes with the territory, and I will take full responsibility for that and for the emotion that was attached to it. Based on the evidence we had, we felt that one of our drivers had been threatened, a driver who had been extremely courageous in recent words and actions. It was our responsibility to react and investigate, and that's exactly what we did.
NASCAR is at Pocono Raceway in Pennsylvania this weekend. Bubba Wallace is going to have added security for the race after receiving death threats. All right, let's take you back to football. And Colin Kaepernick, still the talk of the league. The NFL says it has advised teams to prepare to start training camp on time, which for most teams will mean no later than July 28th. Will Colin Kaepernick be reporting to camp next month? The former NFL quarterback hasn't played in the league since 2016, and many wonder if he's going to get another chance. So let's bring the guys back in, along with Jeff Darlington. And Jeff, I want to start with you. What are you hearing about the level of interest in Kaepernick as of now?
Well, this one's tricky, Ryan, because like we can continue to hear that teams are interested, that a coach is willing to sign him, that Mark Davis, the owner of the Raiders, has told his coaches and GMs that they can sign Kaepernick. He said that for years now. Anthony Lynn says that Colin Kaepernick fits his offense and would have him on a list of quarterbacks to bring in and work out, yet nobody has done that yet. So it's a little bit difficult to try to take the voices of those saying that they would be interested in signing Kaepernick and applying it to the actual execution of doing so. We haven't seen that yet. So while, yes, it seems like there are people who are more quote-unquote comfortable with the prospect right now, they still haven't done it. One point I would make here, Ryan, is that I was speaking with a couple of people recently in NFL circles, and they actually pointed out to me something about this. If a team is actually still using the excuse that it would be a distraction to sign Colin Kaepernick, there is actually no better time than right now to do so. You conduct interviews through Zoom calls. People aren't even allowed in the facility. Everything is very controlled. So the idea that Kaepernick would be a distraction to a team right now, quite honestly, just isn't the case.
All right. So everybody's saying the words of maybe we'll sign him, but nobody actually doing it at this point or making that move. Dan, I got to ask, how big of a deal would it be for a team to sign Kaepernick right now?
Oh, it'd be enormous. It would be a great sign for the NFL and its leadership to I don't know if it's admit that they should have done something differently in the past, but, you know, Ryan, I was reading All Pro Dad this morning, and there's a quote in it that I wanted to share because I think it's really pertinent to this situation. It said, "Our bad choices in the past do not disqualify us from disagreeing with and opposing those choices now." And I think it's like the NFL and the owners and the commissioner can look back and go, maybe we should have done something different. But now we can make that choice right and give Colin Kaepernick the opportunity to come be a part of the NFL again. And I think that's a really big deal. Football-wise, I think it's irresponsible if a team doesn't sign Colin Kaepernick. We've talked about at great lengths about the coronavirus and how its impact could be seen on the football field. You better have three quarterbacks this year because more than likely you're going to have to use them. And Colin Kaepernick is obviously one of the best 90 people on the planet at playing quarterback. So I just think it's a really good opportunity for the NFL to make a decision right, and also for a football team to become much better with him on your roster.
If he's not one of those three on a team going into the season, I would be absolutely stunned. Dominique, where do you see the best fits are for Kaepernick?
I think Pittsburgh is the best place, but I'm stunned that you'd be stunned. Like, I don't expect them to sign him because I understand all the logic that Dan laid out. but I don't understand why any of these teams would want to sign up for, while it may not be a time for some sort of major media circus, I can't imagine teams who are afraid to sign him before would sign him now so that he could be their third quarterback. And you know how coaches are about control and distractions, which is part of the reason why I said Pittsburgh. That's a stable organization with a very good head coach in an organization that I think has put themselves, as far as NFL teams are concerned, they've put themselves on the more liberal side. So I think that would be a team and a city that is comfortable with that, with taking that risk, and a coach who can handle that, and a locker room that's strong enough to support him. And from a play standpoint, he does, I think, fit in well behind Ben Roethlisberger. A team with a very good defense could really benefit from having a backup quarterback who is ready to step in should the older Ben Roethlisberger get injured, and a backup quarterback who has some athletic running ability. I think that fits well with the defense and the talent that they have in Pittsburgh.
But Dom, I have to ask you, this is a time, you know, the previous years are different. This is a very unique time in history. Don't you think teams would look at it and say, hey, the way Colin Kaepernick is viewed by so many in this country has changed so rapidly, so he's just perceived so differently now, that now, if we want him, we need him, we need another quality quarterback, now is the time we can sign him and really match what society's doing.
I think you're right. I think right now is the best time, a better time than the past, but that's assuming that the owners are neutral. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure that the owners are neutral. I think so many of them, most of them, did not like what he did. So aside from the fact that they hid behind some lies about it affecting ratings or it upsetting fans, I think that fundamentally, many of them did not like him or like what he did or didn't like him because of what he did. And I don't think many of them have changed their mind on that. While they won't come out and speak about a number of things, I certainly don't think they're going to put their names behind the fact that maybe they just were annoyed by Colin Kaepernick, because there is no other explanation, because you're right. The public would be on your side at this point if you bring him in. So if they don't bring him in, I don't know what you could say about it. We all agree that he's good enough to be at least a backup in this league.
Mike, do you think he'll be signed?
I'm hopeful, and I agree with Dan said. He is clearly one of the 96 best quarterbacks on the planet. And I think the key, Ryan, is organizational alignment. I was with the Jets when we acquired Brett Favre, Tim Tebow. These are huge moments that could overrun and overwhelm an organization. And I think the best time to sign Colin Kaepernick, I agree with what the guy said, is right now. Bring him in, embrace him, talk about goals on the field, off the field. You could assess where his conditioning is. And then this way, when we get to the season, it's all about football. And again, you look at a team like Jacksonville, if he's not the best guy in that quarterback room, he's certainly the second best. So he should be signed. I hope he'll be signed. If there's ever a time and a place between what's going on in our country with COVID, it's all lining up, and let's hope he's back in the league.
Okay, we'll see what teams decide to do. Now, guys, I want to take it over to Tampa for a very interesting story. Now, listen to this, folks. Tom Brady continuing to practice with his Buccaneer teammates at a local high school there. This is despite NFLPA advising against players working out together because of the coronavirus pandemic. Now, on Thursday, Bucs Pro Bowl wide receiver Mike Evans joined the workouts. So, what does Tom Brady think about this? Doesn't seem to be concerned about the NFLPA's recommendation. Posting on Instagram, FDR's famous quote, "The only thing we have to fear is fear itself." Okay. Mike, what do you think about Brady leading these workouts despite the strong recommendations not to?
Yeah, Ryan, that's the key right there. Obviously, I live in Florida. We've seen a huge spike. There's a very serious medical situation going on in our country. However, with that said, there's a lot of me that actually admires and respects what Tom Brady is doing. You know, we recently saw Michael Jordan, The Last Dance. Is there anybody that doesn't think that Michael Jordan would be practicing right now? When you're an all-time competitor the way Jordan or Tom Brady is, they have sort of this sociopathic approach of, like, I don't care what other people think. The task at hand is to win professional football games for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and whatever in my way, I'm going to conquer. So I think there's a little bit of a delicate balance. Tom has to remember he has such a big mantle in society that he has to be maybe a little bit more measured in his words. But in a lot of ways, I understand and respect as a competitor what he's doing.
Dominique, what do you think?
I mean, I think he's what I know that Mike is very sure. And I understand that Mike understands how dangerous this situation is. However, it's hard for me to get behind a nonsense quote like that. Like, that's useless in this time. It's as if science does not exist. And I think that it's important to understand that Tom is showing that you are saying that he's showing through this how committed he is to winning. But I would say that it's not necessarily showing that. It's showing a risk that could make this make it harder for this team to win and could make it harder for us to have a season altogether. And the last thing I would say is that not all problems need to be solved the same way. Like every thing that you look at as an obstacle is not a nail that you need to hammer. And I think that there are other ways to find to prepare for this season that do not send a message to the public at large that this is not an issue and do not put your and will not put your teammates and their families at risk. Like, I can't imagine. This is what we talked about in the first segment. I cannot imagine taking a risk like this at this moment and then finding out a few weeks from now that somebody that I truly love and care about has gotten infected with this disease because Tom Brady posted some foolish quote.
Dan, jump in.
That's a good word, Dom. A lot of times, us athletes have to do everything we can to get ourselves out of our athletic mindsets. You know, we're often trained to go, go, go and conquer and nothing can stop us type thing. Mike T mentioned the spike in Florida and how severe the cases are down there with the medical situation. My hope, this is my optimistic hope, is that Tom Brady has had very sincere conversations with everybody attending these workouts going, listen, guys, we are going to do these workouts, but it is mandatory that you wear a mask in all situations outside of here, that you are social distancing, that you aren't living life like in pretending that COVID is not existing, that you're self-quarantining. And maybe those conversations have had to allow these workouts to take place, because if those conversations haven't happened and Tom Brady hasn't been very clear that, hey, guys, we are doing everything we can to put this at the forefront and we are masking and social distancing and quarantining and everything like that, then, yes, this would be something that is irresponsible. But if he has had those conversations and those guys have committed to that, I get the football sense of it. And again, trying to get myself out of the athletic mindset.
Mm-hmm. Right. You know, but isn't it just like ahead. A basic risk reward analysis in this situation? It's like, how much is this really rewarding their offense? Like, is it going to get them 3-4% better? It just doesn't seem worth the risk to me, given everything that's going on. And I love my teammates and I trust my teammates as much as I can trust 20-something-year-old single males. Like, that's not happening. Trust me.
You know
me.
What? Those and guys, and Dom, guys, I just want to jump in for a second, because here's the thing. I'm just going to play devil's advocate here. The U.S. had the highest single-day number of cases of COVID-19, 40,000, just yesterday. The protocols in the NFL are still a work in progress. Florida's got cases spiking. Is anybody concerned? And, Mike, I'll ask you this. Are you concerned that while what Brady might be doing is necessary to prepare for the season for him, that, and Dom touched on this earlier, that it might make it harder to have a season or continue a season if other guys follow suit and we have more exposures and more possible positive tests?
Ryan, that's a completely fair point. And I think that's the ultimate balancing act that we've been talking about throughout the show. On the one hand, the cases are spiking in big states like Florida, and we have to take all reasonable cautions. We all need to wear masks when we're outside. But then on the other part, Neek just talked about it, where you have maybe a 3-4% chance of improvement. Tom Brady would be out there if there was a 0.5% chance of improvement, because that's what makes him such a great competitor. So we do have to take all reasonable precautions. That is first and foremost. And then within that context, these guys are going to do what they can to get ready, because I know in the back of Tom Brady's mind, he's saying, well, what did Teddy Bridgewater do today? Did Matt Ryan work out with the Falcon receivers? Hey, isn't Drew Brees out in Southern California working with his guys? So that's a little bit of the mindset, but we do need the balance, Ryan, because we don't want to jeopardize the season.
All right, that's the key, balance. But you wonder how all this is going to impact others. But as Dan said, maybe it's a good thing. Maybe he's talked to his guys and said, be safe outside of this, and these are actually not going to be a problem. So we'll have to see. Guys, we'll be back. And Jamal Adams, let's talk about this. Jets' best player, he's unhappy with the team. Why the support he got yesterday might have head coach Adam Gase just a bit worried. But first, getting a little sneaky Hembo. It's going to be for Buster Olney. Who joins us next? Who is the only active player to hit 30 home runs in a 60-game span? We'll see if he knows when we come back.
Geico gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like your mom, when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name, check. Birthday, social security, is that a thing? Hey, mom, what is my social security number? Mom? 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 Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag done.
Geico. Always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
Back with you on Get Up. Ryan Smith in for Greeny, and good thing, because we've got more Jets turmoil. Check this out. Defensive coordinator Greg Williams came to the defense of his all-pro safety Jamal Adams on Thursday. Adams unhappy with his current contract. He asked the team for a trade, but Greg Williams got his back.
I learned a long time ago, you never, ever mess with a guy's contract. Let them get it taken care of, have their back. I've got his back on those type of things. He's got to get all that stuff settled, and he knows that. I think the world of him, but I'm hoping everything goes well. I love coaching him, and I got his back.
That's great. I wonder how Adam Gase feels about that. Let us bring in the guys, and Mike, I'll start with you.
Yeah, I know Adam really well. He does not like it, and he may not say that publicly, but I promise you that he's speaking to Greg Williams. Adam does not want to be the bad cop to Greg Williams' good cop. Greg Williams is a really good coach, very talented, but 10 or 15% of the time, you're going to pay the Greg Williams tax. He's going to say things that just don't align organizationally. This is an issue that should be handled by the head coach and Adam Gase, Joe Douglas, the general manager of the Jets, and Greg Williams should coach defense. And the players that are on the field, that's his responsibility. And I know Adam is a very diligent, orderly guy. It's something he wants to handle, and he doesn't want to read about one of his coaches trying to be the good cop in this situation.
The Greg Williams tax, and Adam Gase is paying it. Dan, Adams clearly isn't happy in New York. Where do you think this all ends up? Where does the blame lie?
Well, sometimes there's coaches in the NFL who think they're Bill Belichick when they're not. When it becomes, hey, it's my way or no way. And we've seen this movie a little bit before with Adam Gase. I like Mike T, know Adam. And we've seen it happen in Miami where good players were sent away because they could not get along with the head coach. Minka Fitzpatrick and Kenyon Drake. Ryan Tannehill struggled under Adam Gase and all of a sudden becomes one of the better quarterbacks in the NFL last year. So not only are those guys not wanting to play for their coach, but those players are playing better when they leave Adam Gase. And I want to phrase it like this for everybody. Jamal Adams is a young, talented player who's famous, has a ton of money, living in New York City, and he wants out. I mean, that is because of the head coach. That is damning because that is everything every young athlete or NFL young NFL player wants. Live in an awesome city, have tons of money, be famous because of football, and have your youth. And he wants out. That, to me, if I'm Woody Johnson, is a big deal.
All right, so Dominique, how do you think Adams is handling all of this?
I mean, he's using the leverage that he feels like he has at this moment. And I understand the criticism of Greg Williams, but I feel like that's what a lot of defensive coaches would say behind closed doors. Maybe he shouldn't have said it publicly, but that's what you want to build. You want to build this trust and faith in your guys. And I think that's what Greg Williams is thinking. So while you say his job is to coach defense, I think he believes he's coaching defense right now. This is part of letting your players know that you got their back and you're with them, because there are often disagreements inside a locker room, and it's nice to be able to feel like you can trust and confide in your defensive coordinator. But I would say one thing. If I was Jamal Adams, I would text Greg Williams and say, I don't want you to have my back. I want you to have my check. Like, you need to go get me paid. It's not about you liking me. It's about me getting paid.
That's what he really wants to hear. All right. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it. Well, coming up, he's just 24. He's already an MVP and a Super Bowl winner. So if you had an all-time NFL draft, would Patrick Mahomes be your number one pick? Why one of my friends says yes. Back with you on Get Up in a little sneaky Hembo time. Who is the only active player to hit 30 home runs in a 60-game span? Buster, what do you think?
You know, this is one of the stupid Hembo questions that I know that as soon as you give me the answer, I'm going to go, I should have known that one. I'm going to go with JD Martinez.
How could you not know it's Giancarlo Stanton? Come on.
That was my other choice. Thanks a lot, Hembo, for
sure
ruining my day.
Sure it was, my friend. It was Giancarlo Stanton in 2017. But let's go to this. Major League Baseball is moving forward with its return to play plan. Players are scheduled to report on July 1st in preparation for a 60-game regular season starting on July 23rd or 24th. Now, the 60-game season is going to run through September 22nd, with the postseason starting just a couple of days after that, going through October. Additionally, the trade deadline is currently scheduled for August 31st. So let's bring back Buster on this. And Buster, what are players saying around the game about their return from a health and safety standpoint?
Ryan, that for all practical purposes, that the players will be an important part of enforcing the health and safety protocol. Yesterday, I talked with Jake Diekman, who has an extensive medical history. He's battled colitis. He's had multiple surgeries. And he talked about that, how in the clubhouse or in a team atmosphere, how other players will be holding their teammates to account. We heard earlier in the week from our Marley Rivera about how in one training site, some veteran players found out about a young player in that group who'd gone out clubbing. And those players went to the young guy and said, you cannot do that. There's going to be a lot of that in baseball as part of this effort to keep everybody healthy, to keep everybody given the best chance to not be infected with the virus.
Yeah, that's going to be key, as well as the protocols. Now, there's a twist on all of this. The baseball season, we know it's usually a marathon. This one is going to be a sprint. How's that going to impact play?
Players are fascinated with the idea of the ramped up intensity that we're going to see in baseball this year with the 60-game schedule. Every game, every loss, every set of three losses is going to feel like a massive crisis. And it's going to really, I think, push the emphasis on these great rivalries, because 1/6 of the Cubs and Cardinals games are going to be against each other. 1/6 of the Yankees-Red Sox games are going to be against each other. Dodgers-Giants. And in talking with players this week, they think that it's going to be a lot of fun. Look, it's a special circumstance. Everyone's trying to make the best of a bad situation, and they're getting excited about the extra adrenaline we might see.
Oh, it's going to be exciting. Buster, thank you. Vince Carter made it official yesterday. He is retiring. What Jay Williams remembers about one of the most exciting players the NBA has ever seen. You're watching Get Up.
GEICO knows there are many reasons why you ride. From the thrill of the revving engine and pure adrenaline of flying down the highway, to the confidence of knowing that GEICO always has your back with 24/7 access to claim service. But Ari Snyder has one reason in particular.
I have extremely large upper arms. They won't even fit into most shirts. Thankfully, biking really embraces vest culture, so I feel accepted.
GEICO Motorcycle. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.